That's hooey and applesauce. Three words for that. Ooh, la, and la. When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. Ah, it's gangbusters.
Damn a shake in NFL. In NFL and Dave. Damn a shake.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Damashek. What's going down? We are 28 days away at the time of this recording from regular season kickoff, and it is Thursday in the AM out here on the West Coast, and that means that in just a few hours, preseason football kicks off. Let's talk about it to our pal from NFL.com. Adam Rank, who was compared, by the way, after the premiere of the NFL.com fantasy preview show last night on the network. I saw on Twitter someone compared you to King Kong Bundy. And it was an apt Dave. Comparison.
Thanks, Dave. Well, thank you for having me. And thanks for that comparison.
Well, that's King a flattering
Kong.
One.
Was I in a, but what was it in reference to?
I
just look like King Kong Bundy?
Up on the panel there with all the fellas that were doing the show with Elliot Harrison. Andy Siciliano, Mike Fabiano, and Dave Damashek.
Because of three of those guys, I'm like three times the size.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess so. You tower over them in both height and width.
And girth.
Yes. So, all right, like I say, preseason football, I got to be honest with you. I don't want to be a curmudgeon. I don't want to be a wet blanket. It's great, yes, a few weeks ago. Who knew if we were going to see these games or whatever? But I can't get too excited about it. You know, it's preseason football. By the way, do you hear? My allergies are kicking up, and it gives me a nice smoky quality. Maybe my voice will be I'll be a little less annoying in the voice. I like that.
So how much time are you going to devote to preseason football on Thursday night or over the weekend?
I don't know, Adam.
Talk about it.
I don't know, yeah. Well, we are going to talk about football hardcore style with one of my favorites from ESPN.com. Used to talk to him a lot on my old show, and we're going to bring him back. He's on the banks of the Three Rivers as we speak. He's a great scout, worked with the Cleveland Browns, worked with the Pitt Panthers, and so on. Knows his stuff, obviously, much more than you do, more than I do, at least. But Matt Williamson coming up from Scouts, Inc. Okay. Love yapping with him. And also along for the ride in here, producer now, because, mm-hmm. of course, Necktie Milner yeah. is working on the fantasy show. So he's very busy. We don't know how often during the season he's going to be around. So I guess his interim guy for now, and we'll see how it goes. We now have the guy who you listen to us. We did three shows from Canton last week. We were out there for the Hall of Fame induction. We weren't just vacationing. It didn't just so happen. We went out
when your boss is there with you, yes, it's not a vacation.
No, our boss was not there.
My boss was there.
Who's that?
You.
All right. Here we go. So, all right. Well, listen, I like to consider us, peers, pseudo peers.
Because my name's on the show?
No, it's...
I was photographed with Marcus Allen on the NFL.com homepage.
No, you weren't.
But so outside of those
That
instances.
Has more to do with the fact that you look like King Kong Bundy than anything else. We don't want to repel potential listeners. So, anyway, part of that trip out to Canton, we stopped at Primanti's. And on our way into the delicious sandwich joint in Pittsburgh on our way to Canton. And along for the ride with us was David Boeheim. And he got us lost quite a bit and everything on our way over there. You've heard him on the show before. He filled in a few weeks back when Necktie Milner was off in Gay Paris on Independence Day.
Yes.
The day of celebration of the red, white, and blue, he was off in Paris.
Mr. I Hate America was out there.
So we have now, instead of Necktie, we have another corporate suit in here. But Boeheim doesn't really cut the corporate figure,
no.
I don't think so much. He's got longish hair and a beard. He looks like a downright hippie. I think we need to call him. Let me lay this one on you, okay. Rank, see if you like this. Neck tie dye. He looks
Perfect.
Like a hippie.
I can go
neck tie dye. So let's go with that. So neck tie dye, welcome to the show. We'll see how long it lasts. Mind your P's and Q's, and you're off to a good start with getting us Matt Williamson.
Don't hang your hat here, fella.
And also rank. So with these preseason games, again, I don't want to be a wet blanket with it. But whatever. What it makes me think of is, what are the real games and when do they start? And so you tweeted out a little while ago, by the way, at Twitter, at Damashek on Twitter, and at Adam Rank. Rank, you tweeted out a question. What game would you most like to see? Now, I'm looking forward to 28 days from today, the New Orleans Saints at the Green Bay Packers.
Right.
A dandy game, but always trying to improve. It's great, but could it be even better? That's about as good a game as I can think of. But you tweeted out to listeners, to the Czech Republic people, asking the question, what is the optimal matchup for that week one, for that Thursday night game that you'd like to see? We'll get to that in just a minute here. But let's talk about the fantasy show real quick. NFL.com, obviously sign up to play your fantasy there, and I do have to say, a couple reviews that I've gotten. Mo Damashek, my mother, big fan of Adam Rank's.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. She, now, for the record,
I thought she was going to come meet us at Primanti's.
No. So, listen, here's let me just tell you that she, shockingly, as soon as the show ended, the telephone rang. It was her and the old man calling, and shockingly, they thought I was the best one on the show.
Well, that's,
my parents thought I was the best one. That's
I
couldn't believe
agree.
It. My jaw dropped when I heard that they thought, and they also thought I looked the best. So
well, yeah.
Now they I'm not going to say it was not Mo. It was not Mo Damashek, but another person on the inside who saw the show.
Right.
They said, you know, Mo Damashek said that Adam Rank is delightful.
Well, that's nice.
He's delightful. Is he as nice as he seems? That sort of thing. Like, yeah, no, he's a Hollywood phony. He's on the podcast with me every week, but no, I don't know how he duped you and the rest of the world. So, but there was another comment that your suit was no good. You had a brown suit, a three-button job.
That's my favorite.
You looked a little like Mark Schlereth, you know, wearing a suit from 1997.
Is it my King Kong Bundy cut not doing it?
Yeah, no. Well, I think the suit needs to go.
You know what the problem is? And this needs to be brought up. It's... Unless you're George Clooney and Matt Damon in the remake of Ocean's 11, the suit with a dress shirt and no tie does not look good on anybody.
I'm with you. You're preaching to the choir.
Is it a thing, like, if I had a tie, do you think it looks better? Like,
no. It's still not a good...
It's still a terrible
it's not
suit.
A good, yeah, no, it's not a good suit for 2011.
Like, what are they saying about
Don
us?
Draper happened. Don Draper and Mad Men happened, and everybody went back to that early 60s look. You've got to get the two-button jacket, the thinner tie. Well, I guess we're not wearing ties, but that's what you need,
why
a thinner
we,
cut.
Though?
I don't know. I don't know. I guess the idea is that fantasy more casual, or I'm not sure I get it.
No,
makes me feel like we're on the JV.
Are we not talking ball?
We're talking ball.
Talking ball.
Yeah, we saw Pat Kerwin and Tim Ryan over there in Canton, the hosts of the Sirius show, and we love listening to them talk ball.
Talking ball.
Because that's what they say. Tim Ryan, he asks a question. He'll say, like, hey, Tony Romo is the QB of the Cowboys. Talk about it. That's what he says to whoever he's interviewing. And so you think Tim Ryan?
You know what? I ran into him at the Cleveland airport, and I would never pretend that I am somebody of importance, and I will never overestimate my place in the world.
I don't think you could pull it off if you did pretend.
Exactly. But I swear to goodness, Tim Ryan was IFing me for a good 5 minutes.
Talk about it.
I don't think he wanted to talk about it. I think he wanted to strangle me.
Well, we were in the press box during the ceremony, the speeches and everything else. People have talked about Shannon Sharpe's speech, Prime Times and beyond.
Sure.
And we were up there watching it. And afterwards, after the ceremony, we, neck tie dye. We ask him, hey, neck tie-dye, where were you for the whole thing? Why were you up in the press box? And he says, hey, we were backstage. And I said, what do you mean backstage? Oh, yeah, all the players were there. Neck tie-dye is a Miami native, and so he's a big Danny Marino fan. And apparently got Danny Marino's autograph. Kudos, I say to you.
Did you get Marino's autograph?
To get autographs working for the NFL.
Oh yeah, so you didn't he didn't get Danny Marino's autograph, but then he also didn't get Jack Youngblood's autograph from the LA Rams. He didn't get Jack Youngblood's. And so you had a football that wasn't signed by Danny Marino and another football that wasn't signed by Jack Youngblood. So I said, It's fine to get your favorite or not get your favorite player's autograph from my from the Miami Dolphins. Why would you get Jack Youngblood's and not get one for one Adam Rank, who loved the LA Rams growing up? Talk about it.
Talk about it.
It was supposed to be a birthday present. I was trying to hide it.
You creep. That's I think your people, the tie-dyed sort, the hippies, I think they call that bogarting. you're bogarting the autograph there, neck tie-dye, and that's no way to ingratiate yourself to your new boss, Adam Rank.
Well, I'm glad that they didn't have a Jack Youngblood autograph football, because I would hate to imagine some 20-year-old interns tossing that ball around in the video control room on Wednesday.
All right, so number 16, before we get to Matt Williamson, episode 16 here of the program. Of course, as always, you can subscribe on iTunes. I've been told these are the things that you need to do. Okay. You need to subscribe, you need to rate it, and you need to comment on it. We appreciate it if you can.
Even if it's about my suit.
Yeah, right. But yeah, weigh in on the brown suit.
So I got to go back to 3-day suit broker and say this isn't good enough.
Well, according, I'm not going to sell anyone out, but yes, the suit. I happen to agree that the suit's no good.
No, it's fine. It would be nice if we had a sponsor call in and be like, you know what, come in and I'll suit you up.
That's not a bad call.
No, you know.
It looks like the suit, now that I think about it, when Magic retired from the Lakers and he wore that brown suit, that's what it looked like.
No.
You remember that when Magic he had the suit and he actually was able to, under the white hot lights, he pitted out the suit. He literally did.
I remember.
That's what you look like. You get the flop sweats too.
That was a very...
No, not the day he retired. I'm saying the day they had the ceremony at the forum for him. No, I'm not talking about the day he had his press conference to announce that he was ill. So, all right. Now, we'll get to Williamson in just a second here. But number 16, we honor the episode number with the player who wore that number best. Pretty easy one here. Joe Montana, when we're talking NFL players. Also, though, Jim Plunkett, Lenny Dawson.
Lenny Dawson offered up the number 16 when Montana when Montana came to the Chiefs. Montana, being the gentleman that he is,
he said, "I'll turn it upside down.
I'll wear number 19. I won't make you pull that number off the rafters or out of the rafters."
That's a classy move. That's a very classy move. I like that.
Jerry Rice did
Jerry
not
Rice
do this.
Didn't do
nope.
that. Take
I'll
Steve
take
White.
80. Remember, and then he went to the Broncos and he kind of threw kind of a fit because Rod Smith wouldn't give it up. Like, no, I've been here for 20 years. Why would you're not even going to make the team? Why would I give it up for you?
It sounds like a great number, but also let's keep in mind that the likes of Mark Malone wore it for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Scott Pelure wore it for the Dallas Cowboys. Who else? There have been some real
but three Hall of
stakers.
Fame quarterbacks.
Did Mike Pagel wear it? Is that right? Mike Pagel for the Indianapolis Colts. I feel like he maybe wore 16. Baseball, you had Whitey Ford. Puck.
Bo Jackson.
Bo. Is that what Bo wore?
With the Royals.
Boy, people talk about primetime. It seems like Bo is a little bit pushed down already in history by primetime being the two-sport athlete, but Bo was the real deal.
Right.
Bo was the far superior
baseball
player.
He was a real baseball player, and he was a real football player.
Yes. Hock. I was going to call it Puck. That was something in between Puck and Hockey, so I just called it Hock. But Hockey, that's a rich position at number 16. Marcel Dion, Brett Hall, Henri Richard, Patty LaFontaine, Trevor Linden, Michel Goulet, and the list goes on.
You said Marcel Dion.
I did say.
Triple Crown.
Triple Crown line?
Yeah.
Name the other two.
Charlie Simmers and Davey Taylor.
Ugh, you Charlie Simmers. Chaz Simmer wore it, number 16. Good try, though. You're a SoCal guy. You're not expected to know your puck, even though that's your local hockey team. Hey, we wrote on NFL.com on the instant debate. The question for Thursday was, what game are you most excited about seeing this year that involves a player returning to his old team, to his old town to play a game? Steve Smith, of course, now an Eagle. That is just getting ridiculous what the Eagles are doing. How do they? I mean, Steve Smith is almost an afterthought that Well, yeah, Steve Smith will be the number three wide receiver. Okay, yeah. The best receiver on the Giants, your division foe, is now your number three wide receiver. It's loco. Ronnie Brown. Ronnie Brown was the feature back on a run first team for the last couple of years. He's their third down back. Yeah, he'll back up Shady McCoy. Yeah, he'll just go in there on third downs. And yeah, Deion Lewis, the kid out of Pitt, another nice running. But yeah, he'll be our number three. He won't ever even touch the field. We're so loaded. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's going to be an insane year. I mean, if they go anything less than 16-0, is it a disappointment?
Yeah, pretty much.
I think that's what we have to establish. It's always good. That's the way you want to do it. You want to make it. You want to make Eagles fans feel bad about things. It's the same thing as the Patriots. Hey, if they don't win every single game and win the Super Bowl 78-0, then the season's a disappointment. I like that.
It was like when the Red Sox started this year and they were, hey, is this the first team to go 162-0?
Yeah, and so I'll tell you, my answer was, and yours too, Rank, was Jay Cutler going back to Denver.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's week 13 in December. That game is going to be an apocalypse for people who like quarterbacks. I think poor Denver fans, it really is going to be like they're the Scrooge being visited by the ghosts. You know, the ghost of football past was Jay Cutler. He basically started this whole unwinding of a perennially good football team when he basically forced a trade away from there. Now he's going to come in, and that team, that Bears team, hear me now. Here's a bold prediction out of Damashek.
Okay.
That Bears team's going to stink. Why? First of all, it's the chemistry has to be fragile. Oh, I don't care what Olin Krutz, who's now gone, who was a glue guy, and Brian Urlacher said, there have to be some guys in that locker room who have been told, keep your yap shut about Jay Cutler's behavior in the NFC Championship.
Right.
But listen,
Gale Sayers didn't.
Well, Gale said, oh, by the way, that was another good one from Neck Tie Dye. Yeah, how about this? There's a little side note. We interviewed for 25 minutes in Canton the great Gale Sayers. I know Neck Tie Dye doesn't know who he is, but he's one of the five or six or seven greatest running backs of all time. If he had stayed healthy, maybe he would have gone down as the greatest running back of all time. 20 or 25 minutes, during which time we talked about food in Chicago, which was a fun
conversation.
Delight,
yes. Yeah.
And then we also talked about that he liked to go down the street, a few blocks down the street from where he lives, to Soldier Field, and he watched that NFC title game, and he basically ripped Jay Cutler. He did not approve of that, like most of the world didn't. But what was interesting was we recorded that whole interview, and
when's
that
available?
We said necktie dye, let's get that thing up, and turned out that they lost it.
What?
They lost the file. They lost the
so that wasn't on anywhere.
No, it didn't.
So it was like my contribution to the Marcus Allen interview. Nowhere to be found.
So I say to Neck Tie Dye, well, don't worry about losing it. We'll just get Gale Sayers again next week. And Neck Tie Dye's response was, how are you going to get him again? I said, we're not getting him ever again. That's the point. You just lost a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
So, don't you have a Gale Sayers card on your cube?
I love Gale Sayers.
Oh, so you
Why
know
did you hate him so much to lose the interview?
Silence.
All right, listen. So I think so, and Kyle Orton may or may not be fine, but that team is going to be lousy, so he's not going to be the savior. And so by that point in week 13, Tim Tebow will be out there proving that he is not worthy of ever being an NFL starting QB. He's an abject bust. I don't care how popular a personality he is. He's not practically good enough to be an NFL quarterback. I want to ask, that's definitely something we'll get into with Williamson, his thoughts on Tebow. But that Bears team, this is a team that I'm assuming some people regard as a contender once again. They, after all, hosted the title game last year. But they're going to be 0-3. Their season starts with Atlanta, then at New Orleans, and then Green Bay. That's 0-3. And once they're 0-3, and then you mix in the questions about what does teammates think of him after last year's collapse and everything. I think this is going to be a toxic, nasty year in Chicago, especially with the Lions on the rise. I don't know how Minnesota's going to be, and then of course Green Bay is arguably the best team there is. This is a recipe for disaster for Cutler and company.
Bears no better than third place.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, yeah, I think I agree with that. And another team that isn't a Super Bowl contender or anything, but people are talking about the Rams, and they've made some decent additions. Mike Sims-Walker to help Bradford out. And, of course, yeah, the ever-underappreciated Steven Jackson defense is coming along, so on and so forth. But that's another team that's going to be 0-3. How do they start the year? They have a brutal ride, too. They play Baltimore, which
Philadelphia's in there.
Philadelphia, obviously, is going to beat them. I think that's their week one game, isn't it?
They have Philadelphia week one. Then Baltimore, I believe, is week three. And then they have another tough one in there. Oh, then they're at the Giants in week two.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, they're going to be 0-3, too. So once you're 0-3, as you always see the stats say, like, well, teams that start 0-3 don't make the playoffs very often.
If they go 2-1 or something crazy like that, that's...
Well, the Jets, actually, that's what helped them, was that they had such an awful schedule to start the season. And I remember, you know, I think even Rex Ryan said, if they can get through this at 2-2 or 3-1, they're, you know, the sky's the limit. And they did do that, but I don't think either one of those teams is going to do. I think that's 0-3 staring both of those teams in the face. So, all right, listen, let's talk. We'll talk about the games that we're excited about on the regular season schedule, or at least the game we'd love to most love to see start the season off. But right now, let's get to our fella Matt Williamson.
Dave, dee-da-da-da-da-da-dum-dum, Dave.
All right, Ray. Here's a guy, an old pal of mine from my ESPN podcast. He was a regular on that. Always loved kibitzing about the pigskin with him. Former scout of the Cleveland Browns. Now you can check out his work on ESPN.com. From Scouts, Inc., also one of the hosts of Football Today on ESPN.com. Matt Williamson, what's going down, fella?
Hey, Dave, how you doing, buddy? Just hanging in my Pittsburgh home, you know, getting ready for tonight. Big games.
I know. It's nice to finally have football back. But Rank and I have been talking about the fact that preseason, it's exciting. You know, we didn't know if we were going to see any preseason games. We didn't know if we were going to see any regular season games. But it's still going to be 4 minutes into the first game. We're going to be like, oh, yeah, this counts for nothing. Let's get to the kickoff already.
Yeah, I was just saying that. I was like, it's so easy to overreact, especially for that first wave of preseason games, because you're watching every snap. And, boy, how's that guy do? Oh, Philip Rivers missed that pass. Maybe he's not going to be good this year, you know? I think it's just something you have to hold back a little and say, you know, this is just a preseason. These guys haven't played together. They haven't worn pads in a while, you know, and let's give it a break. It is exciting to see, but let's just, you know, hold it back a little.
Well, yeah, and it's sort of like watching, I guess, if you're a fan, an aficionado like Rank is of figure skating. It's kind of like when you watch figure skating, all you're watching for is to see them not fall down, or maybe if you're evil, you're rooting for them to fall down. Yeah. If you're watching your team, all you're rooting for is don't get hurt, don't get hurt, don't get hurt. That's basically what you do through the preseason, right?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, if you're rooting for your Stellars, you know, you kind of look like, let's get Ben out of there. Let's keep him clean. Let's get Paul Amalu out of there. But then you want to see, you know, those rookies though too. You know, what's Hayward doing this year? You know, I want to see him in the black and gold and what he looks like. You know, so I think there's a lot of that out there too. Let's see what the new faces look like in the pads and out there in the scheme.
Yeah, I agree with that part. That is the pleasure of preseason. By the way, make sure you follow Matt. Always good stuff on when it comes to talking NFL football. Matt Williamson NFL on Twitter.
That's Williamson NFL. I'm really active on there. It's a lot of fun. And
So, all right, let's kibitz about a bunch of different things that people are yammering about here in August. First of all, Tebow, obviously, that is the big story in Denver, and a lot of noise being made by Merrill Hodge a week or two ago saying that he's just never going to be a great pro. I happen to agree with that. I mean, that he looks more like Tom Seaver throwing a ball than he does an NFL quarterback with that huge windup. But you still have, there's Brady Quinn, there's Matt Leinart, there's Vince Young, there's Rex Grossman. It's something that goes on year after year, this conversation about first-round busts and what a crapshoot it is with QBs. Is there any name that I just said there that you think still has something that still has a chance of making it as a legit NFL QB?
I agree with you, and I agree with Merrill in terms of Tebow. I'm not a fan at all. I've said that before he was even picked. I thought that was way too early. Those names you mentioned, Vince Young still intrigues me. You know, I've been saying, honestly, I called this one a long time ago, but this is the perfect place for him to go. You know, not only is Andy Reid have a great track record of getting the most out of everyone's physical talents at that position, but amazingly enough, I think he can go into the locker room and look up to Michael Vick. pick and say, hey, I mean, his career was in a lot worse of a state than Vince Young's is. And, you know, Young has all the talent in the world around him. Yeah, I have pretty good faith that he's going to get in the game at some point. I don't expect Vic to, you know, play 16.
Yep.
So I think he's going to show some people what he can do. I don't love him, but for the situation he's in, that might, you know, pull his career out of the dumpster.
What do you think, though, about guys like, I think two guys that I have a little bit of pity for, Matt Leinart and Brady Quinn. These guys were first-round draft picks, and I think that universally everybody has decided neither one of them has any chance of making it. From what you've seen, you've looked at these guys, you've scouted them. Do you see anything in them that makes you think that they do, that maybe if they got in the right situation that they might take off?
No. My thing with Leinart is everything he does is too slow at this level. I mean, his drop from center, his release, the way he processes information, the way it comes out of his hand. He doesn't have a big arm. That's fine at USC when you have first-round picks all around you and you can take your time. But he just doesn't do anything quickly enough. He plays the game too slow, and he doesn't really have the physical capabilities to overcome that from a delivering the ball standpoint. I think Quinn has more ability than Leinart, but Quinn is a coward to me in terms of he doesn't push the ball down the field. He just dumps everything off and doesn't take any chances. And that can change, I suppose, but wow, he's got a long way to go. He's shown me nothing behind center at the NFL level.
It's weird, though. How does Matt Leinart, you can see that. It's the eyeball test, and with all the combine and the various little tests that these guys are put through, how was it not collectively and universally decided when Matt Leinart was being looked at that, oh, well, clearly he's just too slow and doesn't have a big enough arm? How did a team end up using a pick that high on him?
Yeah, and very few were critical at the time. I mean, it's easy for us to sit back now and criticize the Raiders even for taking Jamarcus Russell first overall, but none of the experts criticized it at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, same with the Leinart pick. It obviously is a very inexact science. And the guy was a Heisman winner. I mean, he was a great college football player. So, mm-hmm. You know, we saw him on TV every week, USC, you know, winning national championships, winning Heismans. I think it was easy to say, okay, he's got it. Well, that it thing's a little overrated too.
Well, I don't think they have any more national championships or Heismans at USC. I think they had to give all those back.
I don't know what you're referring to. Yes, Williams.
That really didn't happen.
One quarterback I'm looking forward to see get started here. He didn't get much of a chance in Philadelphia before he, you know, got hurt in the first week. Kevin Cobb in Arizona. A lot of stock being put into this guy in a very small sample size. So Cobb in Arizona, talk about it.
Obvious upgrade. I mean, they were playing with the three of us at quarterback last year. I mean, and that's a problem, clearly. You know, and one thing that Kurt Warner's departure really showed us was that's a bad offensive line. And that worries me for Cobb, too, because I look at him right now as a young player with upside. I can't be critical of them going out and getting him because I think he has a chance to develop into a solid starter. I don't think he's going to go to a lot of Pro Bowls. I don't think he'll be elite. But as it stands right now, he needs his conditions around him to be favorable. You know, when the play breaks down, he's not going to make a lot happen. He's not Josh Freeman. He's not Ben Roethlisberger by any stretch. He can't overwhelm you physically and make that throw and go, wow. But if the play goes to script, you know, the foot hits a five-step drop, his back foot hits, it comes out, boom. He can make those throws. He can, you know, execute the offense quickly. But the improvisational skills, they all scare me. I don't love the guy, but I can see why they would make that move. And the other aspect of that trade that nobody really talks about is what they're doing is their defensive coordinator was a defensive backs coach from the Steelers. So They wanted to install a Steeler-type 3-4 defense. And obviously that's the Steelers of the West with Wiz and Grimm and those guys. Well, DRC doesn't fit the Steelers system at all. I mean, he's a total finesse, man-to-man, slender, doesn't want to, you know, insert himself as a tackler at all. Where the Steelers play off coverage, they want their corners to come downhill and attack, be hitters in the run game, don't let anything behind them, but you're not going to play a lot of tight man, and they're not, you know, high-profile guys. So losing Rodgers Cromartie looks big on paper, but he doesn't fit what they're trying to do anymore.
Yeah, because to the average fan, that seemed like a huge deal because they had Patrick Peterson, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. It seemed like a dream tandem to put there in Arizona.
Right, right. Right. Where in reality, if you look at the Steeler model, they don't use a lot of money at that position. You know, I think Peterson's going to be their Rod Woodson, Charles Woodson. I think they'll use him all over the place. I think he'll do a lot of what we see from Charles Woodson in Green Bay. You know, he was just too good of a talent to pass up. And it also allowed them to move Rogers Cromartie, because I think they had an idea that Philly needed a corner, which they obviously did. So let's get strong at that position so we can land our quarterback.
Well, you know, we were I'm a little bit nervous. You mentioned the Steeler secondary. I'm after what we saw Aaron Rodgers do and what we've seen repeatedly Tom Brady do to that secondary. Ike Taylor and then a bunch of question marks. The Steelers are in trouble in the secondary, right?
They are. And of course, their pass rush makes a lot of problems go away. Nobody runs on them. So, you know, they know the pass is coming. Their blitz schemes are hard to pick up. And like I said, they don't give up very many big plays. You know, they play a lot of off coverage, and they come up and tackle. So a really efficient quarterback gives them problems. That's the weakness of the Steelers team. That's how you beat their great defense. Well, you know, Tom Brady always has big games against the Steelers. Aaron Rodgers had a big game against the Steelers. And those guys have big games against everybody, though. You know, people hate to hear that in town here, but I'm on the radio a lot on 970, and they were asking me the same questions of, well, what do they do in the secondary? Well, you can't have everything. And their formula for corners, they use fourth, fifth-round picks on corners every year, and they play special teams for a year or two. They make their bones. Eventually they get in the game. Just don't embarrass yourself out there. Don't get beat deep. Keep everything in front of you. And, of course, when Paul Amalu's not healthy, the whole secondary crumbles.
Well, speaking of that, that's something I've really learned from insiders, guys who really dig into the X's and O's. Gil Brandt, Pat Kerwin, I'm interested in your opinion on this, too. They point to Troy Polamalu as one of, if not the most overrated guy in the NFL. They say he is easy to dupe. If you get him in one-on-one coverage, he's going to be burned almost every time. What do you think about Polamalu?
I think he is overrated, but I think he's very, very special, too. I can't really share those sentiments. I mean, I would not have voted him as a defense player of the year. Actually, I would have voted for Harrison, his teammate. He just misses too much time. You know, there's yes, if you get him in single coverage against a wide receiver, he can be duped, yes. But so does every strong safety. Most strong safeties have no chance in the world of keeping up with wide receivers. Where Troy is the ultimate playmaker, he can do everything asked of him. He plays the run. He is incredible in pursuit. He has amazing hands for the interception. He makes big plays in timely manners. He's great with the ball in his hands. He's a decent tackler, a little bit of a overrated tackler. He can duck his head at times and miss. But you can play just about any coverage with him. So I don't entirely agree, but I do agree he's a little overrated when you're talking about the best players in the league, just because we don't see enough of them.
Mm-hmm.
And since we're talking about overrated, let's talk a little Peyton Manning right now, because one of the things that we always talk about in here, we talk about Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning is a good quarterback. He's a great quarterback. Not one of the 10, not the top, not the eighth best player of all time. But one of the things that the Colts defenders or the Peyton Manning defenders always say is that the Colts have a lack of talent. Like they're just throwing, you know, Division III scrubs out there and stuff. What is a scout's take? Do the Colts have actual talent? What's going on there?
My take of Manning this year, and for the most part, I'm a Manning supporter. I know you guys aren't real big on the guy. I don't think he's the eighth best player that's ever lived, but I think he's pretty special. I mean, I think he's one of the six elite quarterbacks in the game. I think he's one of the best players in football for the last 10 years or whatever. I don't stand alone in that opinion. But one thing I think you really need to talk about with Manning this past year, Manning's greatest asset is his mind, his ability to get his team into favorable plays depending on what the defense gives him. And this past year, he was really unable to do that for a lot of the stretch because their running game was so abysmal. Their offensive line is flat-out poor, and he makes them look good in protection because of his ability to read the rush, get the ball out. I mean, if it was the three of us and your two producers, he still wouldn't get sacked, you know, as much as Roethlisberger. So he has wonderful abilities to make his protection look better. But that offensive line was a major, major problem, and they couldn't run the football with any kind of consistency. So whenever he comes to the line, he's doing all his gestures and doing all those things, and he's reading what's happening, I don't think he had any confidence to go to the run. So everyone kind of knew what was coming. And so that it makes him play one-handed in a way. If he can't use his mental acumen, then that's a real problem. And the other thing that really hurt them last year, too, was Dallas Clark being out. Because Dallas Clark, there's a handful of guys in the league, Aaron Hernandez, Dallas Clark, Reggie Bush, that play two positions. You know, Dallas Clark is equal parts wide receiver and tight end. So if you come out in base personnel against their one back, two tight end sets, well, they just take Dallas Clark, motion him out, and they're going to get him against the linebacker. If you play nickel, they keep him tight, and they run the ball against, you know, lighter defensive personnel. Without him around and without a running game, I felt like Manning had to play, you know, left-handed in a way. And oh, by the way, I do think his skills are starting to slightly decline.
What?
By the way, the thing with Manning is, too, that everybody points to, like you just did, is, hey, listen, he's a coach out on the field because he can basically read the defense and he calls the plays out there. Yeah, guess what? Until about 20 years ago, every NFL QB called his own plays. Terry Bradshaw did it and won
Jim
four
Plunkett
Super Bowls.
Did it.
It can't be that hard if Terry Bradshaw did it to four Super Bowls, right? Speaking of QBs, so let's stay with these guys. Matt Cassel seems to me to have a group of guys around him that are good enough to go to the Super Bowl. The question is, can he take them there? I think that offense is about as, at the skill positions, as loaded as any in the entire league, including even Philadelphia, as loaded as they are now. And their defense is aggressive and young. Cassel is obviously the linchpin, as the QB is for most teams. Do you think he can get them over the hump?
Yeah, I'm with you. And frankly, I give that front office a ton of credit. I think they very much have a handle on their quarterback situation. Hey, we used a second-round pick to get Cassel. We know who he is. He's never going to be Tom Brady. He's never going to be one of those elite six quarterbacks that I talked about. So what do? You know, we have to surround him. We have to make his life as absolute easy as possible to give us a chance to win. We're going to run the football a lot with a two-headed running attack. And, oh, by the way, you know, Jamaal Charles develops as a stud. And, you know, they've done a great job this year of surrounding him with very good skill position players. I still have my doubts that Cassel can, you know, get him past that AFC championship barrier. I mean, they win a playoff game or two, but it's still the best chance they have going. I mean, when Charles got hurt, that's something that doesn't get talked about enough either. In that Ravens playoff game, Jamaal Charles got dinged up, and whenever he became a non-factor, everything went on Castle's shoulders, and he was incapable of handling it. But I think he'll get better at it. He's still young. And one thing that's really interesting about this offense, and it's very Patriot-like, if you look at their skill position players, it's a really interesting spectrum. If you go from big to small of pass catchers, you go Moyaki to Baldwin to Bowe to Breston to Charles to McCluster, where a guy like McCluster couldn't be any different than a Baldwin or a Moyaki. They can attack you now on a week-to-week basis in so many different ways, which is exactly what the Patriots do. Look at the Patriots tight ends, the Patriots running backs. I mean, Danny Woodhead is nothing like Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, and Aaron Hernandez was nothing like an Algie Crumpler type. So they want a lot of different skill sets at their skill positions, and it's going to pay off for them.
Yeah, I'll tell you, at the either end of the spectrum you just mentioned, I think McCluster, people forgot about him, and coming out of Ole Miss, people were really high on him. He was hurt the vast majority of the year. Imagine what he might be able to do. He could be sort of a poor man's Reggie Bush. And then John Baldwin is a guy who I keep talking about as a poor man's Randy Moss, his rookie season in Minnesota. Basically, all they have to ask him to do with Breston and Dwayne Bowe, and look at what Dwayne Bowe did with the second best receiver on that team last year, being Chris Chambers and the year he had. Now he has a legitimate number two in Breston. And Baldwin is only going to be asked to stretch the field, right? Run as fast and as far downfield as possible and take two guys in the secondary with you.
Yeah, yeah. And he still might go up and get the football because he's 6'5 with unbelievable skills. And you don't have to – you can bring him along slowly. He doesn't have to be a real precision Derek Mason-type route runner. That's not what he's going to do, like you said. And McCluster – is the same thing, too, is he's still very talented. He was an early second-round pick that they just a year ago were in love with. I don't know that he can, you know, handle the rigors of the position, but they have so many other guys, he doesn't need a lot of touches to be effective. He can be a Reggie Bush type. I think he could be a Welker-type slot guy, too. So, yeah, they have a ton of options at their disposal. And just about 15 minutes ago, they went out and signed Jared Gaither, who is as talented as any left tackle in this entire league. If he's healthy and motivated, their offensive line now has the final piece where you could put Gaither at left tackle move Albert over to the right side or to guard, and then you really have something.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk now about Joe Flacco, who surely has a chip on his shoulder. He was so criticized. I'm sort of surprised, as a matter of fact, that he's taken as many shots as he has, but because it was really his receivers who dropped the ball in that game against Pittsburgh that that cost the Ravens the game. But going into this year, now my question is, I like, obviously, the defense is going to be good again, and it looks like he's ready to go for a big season. But I look around, and suddenly, I don't know that he has any weapons, really. He has a couple of slower, big-name guys in Hushman Zada and Bolden, but slower guys, and now the unknown Torrey Smith coming in. What do you think about Flacco's prospects for having a big year?
I mean, I think Ozzie Newsome's about as good as any GM in this league, and he has a wealth of very young talent at tight end and wide receiver coming up. But I don't think they did Flacco any services. You know, I've called Derek Mason his whoobie for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's absolutely the guy he's leaned on to a fault, to be honest with you. Too much he's looked at Derek Mason. You take him out of the equation, you take Heap out of the equation, and you really don't replace them with anybody. You expect all these young guys to step up. I think that's putting too much faith in Flacco, honestly. And to be candid, I mean, he's one of the people in the league, even though I'm sitting here in Pittsburgh, that I root for the most, is because, in a way, I sort of discovered him when I was a Pitt. I mean, he was not a big recruit, and that's what I did at the University of Pittsburgh, is I watched all the recruiting tape, and I went to Walt Harris and said, we need to look at this guy. He can sling it. We brought him to Pitt. He's a great kid. He left because he didn't get a chance to start. So I root for him, but I'm not, you know, a huge fan. I don't think that he's – I think he's slightly overrated too. I don't think he deals with pressure very well, which is a huge problem when your biggest rival is the Steelers. I don't think he's ready to elevate the game of all those around him. And I think he's got a lot of tools, but you got to remember, I mean, he's coming from Delaware, and he's still young. It's not there yet. You know, I look at the quarterbacks in this league, and I mentioned earlier, I think there's six – elite guys, and then I think there's eight or nine guys that I would call franchise quarterbacks, you know, Romo, Vic, Eli Manning, you know, a handful of Matt Ryan. And I think Flacco's right on the outside looking in to that group, and that's not quite good enough.
Of the Flacco, Ryan, Sanchez, of those guys, who's the best? Who's the farthest along?
Sanchez is last. I'll tell you what, I'm not a Sanchez guy at all. I give him credit that he's played very well in his biggest games. That's the best thing I can say about him, and that's a great thing to say about a quarterback. Mm-hmm. But I have huge questions about Sanchez. I'm a big believer in Matt Ryan. I think he's exceptional. You know, if you do the quarterback rankings, again, those six elite ones, Ryan would be next to me. I think he's the seventh best quarterback in football right now, and he's very poised to take a big, big step up. I think we'll see a lot more spread, you know, a lot more three, four wide receiver sets there now with the addition of Julio Jones. They're going to be a lot more difficult to prepare for, and Ryan can handle it mentally. I mean, of those three, I think that's it's very easy to say Ryan, then Flacco, then Sanchez.
And just out of curiosity, it was Tyler Palco that beat Joe Flacco out for the starting gig, right?
It was, and he was a good, you know, Pitt quarterback.
Yeah. Last question for you is the running back situation in Dallas. What do you think about Felix Jones? Is it really the intention of the Cowboys to make him their every down back?
I don't think that's a good idea either. And I was really critical of him, them, whomever, a year ago for putting on all that weight. You know, he added some weight to come into camp to handle the pounding, and I'm going to be durable now. I don't, generally, that doesn't work for running backs. I think you kind of have to be who you are. I don't think you have to, you know, make your body into something that it isn't naturally going to be. And I didn't think he was nearly as quick, explosive, frightening because of it. And so, in turn, he really shouldn't be the bell cow. But they have other guys. You know, you use a pick on Murray. I think Choice is a fine quality backup. And for some reason, he's fallen out of favor with them, too. I don't quite understand what they're doing with their running backs. But
what about,
I think...
What about
go ahead.
What about the kid out of Fresno State, Lanae Miller?
Yeah, I mean, he's fine. He was Ryan Matthews' backup in college, and you know, 90% of the schools in the country he would have started for. But he's not special, and I know they're excited about him now. I mean, he's one of the guys that I'm pretty excited about to watch in these next couple weeks or so and see if there's something there to get, you know, to be excited about. But from what I saw of him coming out of school, he had a very average skill set. He looked like a backup to me.
And is it worth even talking? I mean, I obviously, on some level, it matters that Felix Jones is going to be there every down back. But more and more, I mean, Green Bay won the Super Bowl, and I think they ran in total postseason rush attempts, I think, were four for the. Does it even matter now who you throw in the backfield? It is so much a quarterback league at this point, right?
Yeah, generally. You are 100% right. And if I was in charge of building a team or rebuilding a team, the last component I would absolutely invest in is a running back. I mean, if you put an average running back behind a great line or in a situation where there's a threatening passing game with a great quarterback, you're going to do really, really well. I mean, it kind of goes back to the Colts a little bit, too. I think Joseph Addai is very average, and they've won a lot of games with players like him, you know. Mm. So, you know, even New England, too. They won a ton of games with just a bunch of guys at running back and keep them fresh and keep them hungry and battling for playing time. And, yeah, I mean, yes, I'd love to have Adrian Peterson, but those kind of guys are very few and far between. And if you invest in them, they don't last very long. You know, they're just not a heavy shelf life for running backs.
And you see, by the way, for anyone within the sound of our voices right now, you can hear that Matt Williamson knows the game and how helpful that could be, not just in real football terms, but how it applies to fantasy. Williamson, you're willing to attend people's fantasy drafts this year, right?
Yeah, I threw it out there. I've been getting those requests hot and heavy the last couple of years. Or, hey, we'll give you a couple bucks to come down to our fantasy draft, and we'll go from there. So I threw it out there on Twitter the other day, and I got a bunch of responses, and I think a bunch of them were like, yeah, you know, we'll give you a six-pack of iron to come down to. I'm like, well, that's not exactly what I'm after here, but I'm busy enough as it is. I don't know if any of those type of things will happen, but I am pretty active in fantasy, and it's a lot of fun.
All right, well, like we say, you can track him down, ESPN.com. Matt Williamson of Scouts, Inc., hosting the Football Today Show Monday and Thursday up until kickoff, and then they go 5 days a week is what you're doing?
5 days a week during the regular season, yeah.
Wow, Rank, can we keep up that sort of pace?
Ooh.
It's something to aspire to.
It is.
And one last question for you before we let you go. We flew into Canton last week, but actually we passed through Pittsburgh, PA.
Nice.
And it was the wee hours of the AM, but we did make a pit stop at Primanti's. Williamson, what is the correct answer to this question? What is the best meat to get on your Primanti sandwich?
Ooh, kibashi with an egg, extra red hot.
Ooh.
You always have to add the egg.
Well, especially if it's in the morning. It only makes sense to have a nice
obviously
egg.
Right. Yeah, lots of red hot.
I like your choice. It's not my choice. It's an unorthodox choice.
With?
I'm not going to buzz you because that is I like that. It's a cagey choice, the spicy kielbasa. I go classic. I go pastrami one, capicola two. You know what? I like the kielbasa choice. Good for you.
Yeah, you can't argue with yours either. Not bad.
All right, thank you.
You're a seasoned vet.
Williamson, we will we'll hopefully track you down as the season, maybe before we kick things off or certainly once things get underway. Always insightful yapping with you, and love hearing that Berg accent to boot.
Berg accent? I don't have a Berg accent.
I tell everybody I don't have one either. And yet,
Coach Carr.
Yeah, go Steelers. Hey, you don't see Roethlisberger.
Yeah, we'll go downtown and see Coach Carr.
Okay,
all right, guys.
Go pump an iron. Thanks a lot, man.
Take care.
You're listening to Dave Damaschek. You're listening to Dave Damaschek. You're listening to Dave Damaschek.
Told you, Rank. Good fella, right?
Great guy.
Yeah.
We need to have him on some more.
Kielbasa. So what do you think now that you've had a chance to hear some different opinions? Kielbasa, pastrami?
I stand by my choice.
What was it again?
Salami.
Who do you think you are, though, to override me and Williamson, two Pittsburgh natives? You don't tell us. I tell you.
Is that the way it works?
That is the way it works, fella.
So when we go to, like, Wahoo's Fish Tacos, I can demand which way you have your fish tacos?
If that's the cultural cornerstone of Southern California, then that's a shame.
It might be.
Oh. Wahoo's Fish Tacos. Ugh.
Do you not like Wahoo's Fish Tacos?
They're fine. They're better versions of fish tacos in Southern California than Wahoo's. For goodness sakes. No wonder your fan base, we have decided, by the way, your fan base is going to be called Rank Amateurs.
Okay.
From now on.
That was a real nice, yes.
There's the Czech Republic.
Since you ruined it before.
And the Rank Amateurs.
You ruined the poll previously.
And that tie-dye's following is yet to I think you have to have at least one supporter for you to have a following.
They're on Fish Store right now.
All right.
Oh, Lord.
How was the fish show? They were at the Hollywood Bowl, huh?
One of the most amazing venues
really?
I've ever been to.
Great You've show. Never been to the Hollywood Bowl.
It was my first time.
If you're ever out to, if you're ever in L.A., summertime, it's a glorious thing.
I've never been there either.
Oh, it's a wonderful place. It's a good show.
Amazing.
You like fish. You're playing into the stereotype.
Yeah, that's surprising.
Yeah, I'm shocked.
I got my Jerry Garcia tie on. Oh, okay. I'm so shocked.
All right, real quick, Rank, because we're pressed for time here. Let's go through some of the tweets that we got. Again, at Adam Rank and at Damashek are the way to track us down. Always appreciate hearing from you. And the other thing I have to mention is
right.
People have been clamoring for more Talkin' Ball, my little segment that I do. Talkin' Ball just sat down with Vikings head coach Brad Childress. And it was,
Brad Childress.
Yeah, it was great. It came out very well.
And did you ask him why he dressed like Madonna on the sideline?
No, we didn't. We got into that a little bit. We talked about his courageous son. I apologize.
Oh, yeah.
I thanked him for participating in my hooey and applesauce. This is my career while his son goes over to Afghanistan to defend the red, white, and blue.
Yeah,
pretty big contrast.
Trust me, my dad's a World War II veteran, so I understand what it's like not living up to expectations.
All right,
way.
So we have Saints at the Packers and to start things off. And to me, that's about as good as it gets, with the exception of, I think I would say, Patriots and Packers.
I'm
stunned still that the Jets were able to somehow go in there into Foxborough and beat the Patriots. But if the Patriots would have won, the Patriots would have smoked the Steelers in the title game and played them in the Super Bowl. And that would have been a fantastic shootout. That would have been a great Super Bowl. So I think I might say Patriots, Packers. And
that's exactly what Connor Cottrell said. One of the many responses that we got, Patriots, Packers, not only could have been Super Bowl 45, but you got to say it could be the Super Bowl 46 matchup.
Well, I guess so. I've said already, I'm not overwhelmed by any of the AFC teams. The Patriots seem to be the class of the conference. There's so many more good teams in the NFC this year than there are in the AFC. A lot of flaws. I mean, I guess the Chiefs maybe emerge as one of the three or four best teams. I guess.
Well, there's
the
going to be somebody we don't think of who didn't make the playoffs last year, who
Texans,
makes a run.
Texans, maybe. Maybe that. I know everybody for at least a half dozen years loves yapping about how good the Texans
but
are going to be.
But Wade Phillips this year.
Yeah, I know. They're going to have a pass rush this year, and they have some legitimately strong additions to the secondary. So I really like where they're headed. But that being said, yes, Patriots and Packers are probably the respective conference's two best teams. So that would be a good one.
And Steel City Kid 117. Nick Rochetta said, what, Steelers, Ravens?
Steelers, right? Well, we're already getting that
You're
on
getting
Sunday.
That, but why not for the kickoff, man?
Because I don't like an important division game. No important division game should be played in week one. It's like when college football teams, when you pit Florida State and Penn State against each other in week one, that's no good. You can't have a game of that gravity played at the start of the thing. Schedule Northern Tennessee AT&M before you get into the
right.
Ravens. You know, I don't like that. Or in NFL terms, I guess the...
Should we do all interconference week one?
Yes.
Should they rank the teams, NFC, AFC, 1 to 16, and then have the potential Super Bowl matchups?
So be it. I just don't like a game that very well could decide, or at least goes a long way towards deciding who's going to win the AFC North. I think that we can agree that the Steelers and Ravens are the two best teams in the North. So whoever wins that game, the first game of the season, has that sort of import? It doesn't
that's
seem
important.
Right.
Important. Every game matters.
All
this
right.
isn't baseball.
Great news.
Or the NBA.
Nick Tie-Dye is no better than his predecessor, Necktie Milner. He's giving us the wrap-it-up song.
We
got to get out
go.
Of here. All right. So I guess we won't talk about it for a little while longer. We may do...
Do you like Necktie or Necktie-Dye? Talk about it.
We may or may not do a podcast tomorrow, Friday. We're talking about doing one, but we're working on
a special guest.
Yeah, we might.
Possible.
We may do it. We may not. keep on the lookout for it. The best way to do it is to go to iTunes and subscribe, and then it'll just be there waiting for you. It'll be a nice little start to your weekend surprise, you know? You have something to say, neck tie dye? You're leaning in as though you have to something of
something of what's going on? What's pushing us out? Is it the Cover 2?
Cover 2 podcast.
Cover 2. Oh, are you still doing Weiss? Cover 2?
I don't know if I don't like this conflict of interest. Yeah, the big event that they're doing on the Cover 2 podcast today is that Neck Tie Dye is presenting the Jack Youngblood summer football
to Bucky Brooks.
Bucky Brooks. I don't know why. He doesn't.
When do I get to do it? Can I do a pop-in on the Cover 2?
You're more than
give
welcome.
Them guys some heat?
Anytime.
The Heat Master. I'll walk in.
All right. Enough. I think we've said it all, and I think it's time to wrap this thing up. We'll be back for more Hooey and Applesauce later on. But in the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.